Welcome to Fucking Cancelled, a podcast about what the left is like, what to do about it, and what it'll be like once we've done it. In today's episode, we discuss how dynamics of abuse can play out in partnerships where one of the partners has been cancelled. We also talk about how abuse prevention is made more difficult by cancel culture. You are listening to a preview of a paywalled episode. To listen to the rest of the episode, go to fuckingcancelled.com and subscribe.
Bonjour, hi. Toute la journée, man, it goes. Bonjour, hi. Toute la journée, man, it goes. Bonjour, hi. Toute la journée, man, it goes. Bonjour, hi. Toute la journée, man, it goes.
So welcome back to Fucking Cancelled.
Welcome back to Fucking Cancelled.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute, yeah.
Yeah, we are sorry about that. But yeah, basically there's been a serious illness in my family. I'm also moving and it's been an incredibly crazy time for both of us, actually.
Yeah.
So
basically everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. That's what I have been saying. So it's actually the first time in the whole time that we've done the podcast that we went a whole month without putting out an episode. So We really want to thank the listeners for supporting us through this time. We also did it immediately after announcing paywalled episodes.
Yeah, we did do that.
So because of that, we're going to make this episode paywalled as well, because we want to thank the paying subscribers who have been sticking with us. We really appreciate your support.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving you guys another paywalled one. But don't worry, for all the free listeners, there's going to be a free episode soon. We are just sorting that out on top of all the millions of other things going on in our lives.
Yeah. So we appreciate your patience a lot.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for supporting Fucking Cancelled.
Yeah. Means a lot. Okay, so we have a somewhat juicy episode today.
Yeah, so I felt like this was a bit of a controversial and spicy topic, so I thought it would be good for a paywalled episode. But I wrote an article on my Substack recently about the same topic, which was called "You Can Love Your Cancelled Boyfriend and Still Tell Him That He's an Asshole When He Acts Like One," or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, and so we wanted to talk about how cancel culture intersects with domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it does intersect in ways that people don't necessarily expect.
Right.
And because of the fact that cancelers and pro-cancel culture people have taken up all the space in the discussion of abuse prevention, It means that the only way we're going to be talking about the connection between domestic abuse and cancel culture is in basically advocates of cancel culture talking about how that's the only way to take abuse seriously.
Right.
So that's the connection that people have in their minds, is that if you care about abuse, you love cancel culture. They wouldn't phrase it exactly like that.
Right.
But they would say that, like, to oppose cancel culture is to be an abuse apologist.
Right. It's the classic.
Yeah. And so we have tackled this many times on the podcast and really, like, poked holes into the argument and the logic that cancel culture actually is an effective means of abuse prevention, which it is not. I think we had an episode that was actually called, like, "Does Cancel Culture Prevent Abuse?"
Yeah.
Which would be a good place to start if people are new to this topic.
Yeah, we could put that in the show notes.
Yeah. But this is a more specific and detailed kind of angle on some of the ways that these topics can intertwine.
Yeah, totally. And so, I mean, we've noticed a dynamic, or a couple of dynamics, actually. Because, I mean, as we've mentioned before, like, we people send us their stories, like, all the time, and we talk to a lot of people who have been through this kind of experience. And for that reason, we have, I think, like, kind of a unique insight into some of the things that can go on, like, once people have been canceled and are trying to put their lives back together, right?
Yeah.
One element of this dynamic that we want to talk about is just that, like, okay, so, like, a dude gets canceled, right, for some kind of, like, abuse allegation or something like that. And oftentimes it isn't true, right? But sometimes it is, right? Like sometimes the things that he's being accused of are true. And he really does have, you know, really negative patterns. And those can range from, you know, more benign to like really scary. Mm-hmm. But it is sometimes the case that they're real patterns, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens after the cancellation, right? Often these guys have partners, right? And for the purposes of what we're going to discuss now, like we're pretty much going to talk about this in terms of like men and women in couples. But like brief disclaimer that maybe we can go into more later. This can also play out in like queer relationships as well, obviously. But very often the dynamic is between a man and a woman. And so this guy, this hypothetical guy that we're talking about has a girlfriend, right? And, maybe she, well, maybe she's in love with him. Maybe she is just very loyal. Maybe he has never done anything wrong to her. And, you know, for those reasons, she like stands by him, right? When the cancellation goes down. And this can lead to this situation where she also experiences either an overt cancellation or like usually as an abuse apologist, or she takes a lot of heat in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, the partners of canceled people are canceled themselves for not canceling their partner.
Very often.
Yeah. And so this means it's kind of a weird situation to be in because you receive the same kinds of like impacts, meaning that you are probably getting slandered online, you're being dehumanized and treated with cruelty, you're probably being like blacklisted and like not allowed to enter certain spaces, you have to constantly be hypervigilant and like worried about whether or not people hate you. So all the standard like experiences of being canceled are happening to the partner of the canceled person, but it's not about them. It like the accusations aren't about them.
Right.
And so actually I feel like I have a unique perspective on this because I was first canceled for my own reasons. Thank you. Okay. And then I experienced like cancellation as a partner.
Right.
Right. Because I got like a whole other wave of cancellation when you were canceled in a big way. And then some of those consequences were even bigger than, like, consequences I had for my own cancellation.
Right.
And sometimes in the lore, people erase my original cancellation.
Rude. Fucking rude.
Fucking rude. Thank you. I was canceled first. Well, I mean, you're the original canceled, but on a small scale. But I would say I'm the original canceled on a very large scale. But, yeah, so people will just say that I'm canceled, like, for refusing to cancel you. Which is sexist in its own way, you know?
I would say so.
Yeah. But... so I feel like I have both of those experiences. And it is fucking weird to get so much heat about accusations that aren't even about you, you know? But yeah, so you're continuing?
Yeah, so like, you know, some of the consequences that this woman might experience are all the classic ones. But like, for our purposes, like one of the really important ones is that she can be very cut off from sources of support, right?
Yes.
And so when you like imagine a scenario in which a woman... is actually in a relationship with someone who has the capacity to be abusive, do you want that woman to lose all of her sources of support and her community? So, like, the answer to that is obviously no, right? As, like, everyone knows who has ever done any kind of work with, like, abuse prevention.
Yeah, but maybe it might be useful to spend a little bit of time here and unpack this a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Because I don't necessarily think that everybody has done a lot of work thinking about abuse prevention.
I mean, that's true.
But when it comes to domestic violence or intimate partner abuse or whatever you want to call that, like the degree of danger that the victim is in increases exponentially based on how isolated she is.
Right.
And there's a few reasons for this. One is that having community, having friends, is a reality check to your situation, right? So if you are in an abusive relationship, the way that abusive relationships work is like the metaphor of the frog in the pot of water, that the water is slowly increasing in temperature, and now the frog is boiling. But this is such a weird metaphor. I'm like, I hope no one ever did this to a frog. But
that's how you cook frogs, unfortunately.
Well, it's really fucked up. But anyway, I'm really sorry about that. But basically, the idea is that the violence increases slowly. And at each stage, it's normalized, right? And in the classic domestic violence cycle, there's like the escalation, the explosion, and then there's the like honeymoon repair period, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's very apologetic and he is like doing everything to like return to the relationship and to assure her that like, you know, he only acts this way because he loves her and like this isn't going to happen again, you know?
Right.
And then, of course, it does happen again, and it's, like, a little bit worse next time, and it gets a little bit worse. But he's normalizing it, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, different abusive people will do this in different ways, but he is going to try to give her a message that this behavior is normal, this behavior is acceptable, that she deserves this behavior, that she's causing this behavior, and that, you know, other people would co-sign what he's doing, you know?
Mm.
Which is crazy.
Right.
But if she doesn't have trustworthy people in her life to talk to about what he's doing and to see how they might respond, she has no external, like, verification that her gut feeling that this is wrong actually is true. And again, as I've said before on the podcast, domestic violence survivors are more likely to be survivors of child abuse, right? So this is something that she learned very young, probably. And so she doesn't have a good comparison for like what a healthy, normal, like loving relationship is. So it's very important for people who are in abusive relationships to have community. And one of the things that, you know, if you have a friend who's like, you know, even taking the cancel culture out of this conversation, if you have a friend who is like, oh, you know, my boyfriend, when he's drunk, he like yells at me and calls me a slut, you know, the worst thing that you could do is to be like, that's not acceptable. And if you don't leave him, I'm not going to be your friend anymore.
Yeah.
Like, don't do this to yourself. I can't stand by and watch this.
Right.
You know, some people might think that giving that ultimatum is helpful. But unfortunately, what it's going to do is it's literally just going to drive her further into the relationship and cut off one of her only sources of external validation that what is happening is not okay. So that's like one reason, is that she just needs reality checks from people. And importantly, the reality check that she needs is one that can hold his humanity while criticizing his behavior.
Yes.
Because if the friend, even if she's not going to give an ultimatum and be like, I'm not going to be your friend, but if she responds by being like, I've always fucking hated this guy, he's a piece of shit, like even that response is likely to have the effect of the person who's being abused no longer coming to the person who is criticizing with this information, because she knows she's just going to hear, oh, he's a piece of shit. And that doesn't help her with her dilemma because she loves him, you know? And so she actually needs someone who can hold both, that, you know, she loves him. He does have all of these qualities that she loves. He is this full person, you know, who she knows and cares about. And also the behaviors that he's doing are dangerous.
Unacceptable. And not normal.
Wrong. Like, they need to stop,
yeah.
You know? And so the support that she needs is one that can hold both of those things.
Right.
And so the more friends that she has in her life and the more places that she can get that support, the more likely she is to get that kind of nuanced support that is going to be able to do both. So that's one. And then the other one is that she, depending on her situation, may actually concretely need support, material support.
Like a place to stay,
money.
Yeah.
Like just like someone to help her to create a plan. Because and I want to be clear about this, because cancel culture has just really destroyed the way that we talk about abuse, and we don't talk about it with any clarity or specificity. Right. If there has never been physical violence in a relationship, it is not accurate to say that the person's life is in danger.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Like, abuse escalates.
Right.
It's very rare, and in fact, pretty much unheard of, for somebody to just escalate to murder out of nowhere.
Right?
Like, if a relationship is, you know, like, it has the signs of, you know, disrespect, like, degradation in the way that he's speaking to her, that's a red flag to escalating abuse. It potentially could lead into physical violence, but it's probably going to lead into physical violence first before moving on to potentially lethal physical violence.
Right.
And the reason I'm saying this and the reason I'm just being so specific about it is because I think we're so unclear, you know, that we're just like, if someone's being abused, they could die. And it's like, that's not actually true. Not all types of abuse are a risk of death. Some are.
Like yet, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And some are going to escalate in that direction, and some aren't going to escalate. Because a relationship could be extremely abusive and extremely traumatizing and never escalate to physical violence.
Sure, sure.
And that doesn't mean that it's good or that it's not going to totally fuck you up or that you shouldn't get out of it. But when we're talking about physical violence, we should be specific about what risks are real. That's just, I think, responsible. So in a situation where there is a risk, like where physical violence is already happening, the reason why this is so serious is because the risk of death is actually quite a real risk.
Mm-hmm.
Like once physical violence is happening in a relationship, the chances of basically an accidental homicide or a, like, I don't know how they would charge it as like manslaughter or something.
Right.
But like a murder that was like not
wasn't like premeditated.
Not a premeditated murder, but a murder that takes place in the physical violence that is being carried out in that relationship. And so this matters because when we're trying to actually like assess people's risk, when people are in a physically violent relationship and they are deciding to leave, their chances of dying goes exponentially up. Because as soon as he realizes and he finds out that she has this plan to leave, his rage is going to go out of control. And he's probably going to try to, like, prove some kind of point, have some kind of meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those end in death.
Right. And, yeah, like, it's well known that guys who are abusive, like, to that level will often attempt to isolate their victim from their friends and family and support networks, right? Because it makes it easier to normalize the abuse that's taking place. It makes it less likely that she's going to have somewhere to go.
Exactly.
And yeah, just less likely that someone is going to be to her like, that isn't right. That isn't normal. Here are keys to my place. Whatever,
exactly.
Right? And so by a crowd of people on the internet isolating that woman instead, like they're effectively doing the work of the abuser for him. That's it for the preview. To listen to the rest, visit fuckingcancel.com and subscribe. Subscriptions cost $5 Canadian a month and sustain the podcast. Thanks for listening.